Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. All right, we are live.
Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode number 81, 9 squared, of Plebchain Radio. Today is Friday, the 4th of October, and it is 5:58 p.m. on the east coast of the United States. At the time of recording, we have a fun show ahead of you today. Our guest is UTXO, the webmaster. And if you stick around, he might tell you why moose shekels are still a thing. Insert boilerplate introduction here. Oh, I'm sorry, QW. I took a cue from our president, Joe Biden, and read the teleprompter cue.
Pause.
Just a reminder, if you are listening to this show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, first of all, thank you for listening, but I would urge you to hit pause and switch over to the Fountain Podcasting app, where you can earn some sats as you listen and support the value for value revolution. And of course, you can listen to the show live on Nostrness or Zap.stream, and on Nostrness especially, the live chat can get pretty lively. But before we go further with the meme readout and the sermon, QW, you've been keeping your eye on Nostr culture, and you have some findings to share.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a fun little segment we can maybe add in here and there, maybe like a cultural corner or something like that. But this past week, we had the second edition of Zap.cooking newsletter. I think that's great. I mean, I think ultimately, if people are putting in the proof of work, And pushing our culture and the Nostr side of things, Bitcoin side of things, whatever, they should be acknowledged. So Simply Sarah, awesome job on the second edition of the Zap.cooking newsletter. Heather Larson, who does the show Radio Detox, she's a yoga teacher by trade. She did her very first yoga class. I think there was six people that attended via Nostr. So much so that it was such a success, she's going to do it again. So that's awesome to start seeing people use the tools. You know, we have creators, and a lot of times it's not, you know, I'm a dev, but, you know, I have this talent. Maybe I can apply this to the protocol. And shout out Man Like Quex, shout out Open Mic. So via Toonster, Man Like Quex from Tanzania, Arusha, Tanzania, had their first dance competition via Toonster. So we've seen music. We've seen live music. This is the very first time we've seen a dance competition straight from Tanzania. And all of these dancers, a lot of them don't get paid. So they were zapped 240,000 sats, which is a lot of money there. So that's a great thing to see. And it was the very first time. So more of that to come. But these are all just examples of how amazing, how you know, using the tools that we have today can change and affect lives worldwide. And I guess the last thing in the culture's corner, Avi, lightning.store, use the promo code PlebChain for 20% off. Those PlebChain radio shirts are going fast. Once this batch goes, we're done with that color. We're going to probably go to a purple and orange next. So keep a lookout.
You know, QW,
Did I mention their screen printed, Avi?
No, you didn't, QW. That's it is a form of high art.
It's a distinguished gentleman that wears those shirts and lady.
Indeed. Now, QW, I was unfortunately unable to catch the dance competition on Teenster, but I know you did. Are the rumors true that it was an Australian breakdancing lady who won?
Yeah, no. But I would, you know, that probably would increase the zaps if that came out, if all of a sudden she was there. That's like the Caitlin Clark of dancing at this point.
Yes, for sure. And now, QW, it's time for our meme readout. And I'm going with a classic template. It's the four-frame Anakin-Padme conversation. So the first frame is Anakin looking very sincerely and earnestly at Padme, saying, "We're going to reveal Satoshi's identity in our upcoming documentary." And a laughing Padme in the second frame says to him, "It's not Craig Wright, because the courts ruled he's not Satoshi, right?" In the third frame, we have a very smug-looking Anakin staring back at Padme and not saying anything, as if to contradict what she said. And then Padme, now in the fourth frame, looks very concerned and asks, "Right?" And in case you're wondering, QW, what this is about, or anyone who's listening is wondering what this is about, there is an upcoming HBO documentary that's advertising itself as the movie that reveals the true identity of Satoshi. And I am here to call BS on that. Now, there was a really good movie made by Canadian director Paul Kemp. I think it was released a year or two ago, called Searching for Satoshi. And the way that movie worked is there were four or five suspects, you know, the usual suspects, right? Adam Back, Nick Szabo, Len Sassaman, and Hal Finney. And it followed their stories and provided evidence that each one of them might be Satoshi. And in the end, just spoiler alert here, the most compelling case it made was for Hal Finney, but it's not conclusive by any means. And I won't be surprised if this movie follows a similar path. Maybe it won't be Hal Finney it makes the case for. It might end up being Len Sassaman that it provides the most compelling evidence for to be Satoshi. But it is not going to be conclusive by any means. And I don't know who this guy is who's making this movie, but if he is a Bitcoiner, it might end up with some kind of watered down, or it might end, I should say, with some kind of watered down "we are all Satoshi" conclusion.
You know, there's a Poly Market bet on there. So if you go to Poly Market, they're literally betting who will the HBO doc identify as Satoshi. Right now, 60% chance is Len. Sadly, Craig Wright is at 1%. So, and Hal's in second at 12. It's just crazy that they have these markets too, these betting markets now. It's like for an HBO doc. It seems like the at least it's setting up the pretense that there is going to be an answer, right?
Yes. Well,
or everyone just gets rugged on their bet, and it's nobody.
Well, yeah, I'm almost certain it's going to be the way I described it, QW, that there will be compelling evidence provided for, you know, a set of suspects, and but nothing conclusive at the end, and probably ending with "we are all Satoshi" or something along those lines. But that actually leads us into our sermon today, QW, the nameless, faceless dev. Building freedom tech isn't for the faint of heart, as we all know. I mean, not you and I. We haven't built any freedom tech, but we've seen it.
Thinking about it.
We're thinking about it. Yeah, exactly. We'll get to it.
So close.
Because it's so easy for you to make yourself into a target for the quote-unquote powers that be, especially if you run afoul of them. And we've seen this happen to devs who don't protect their anonymity, or rather who just reveal their identity from day one. Some of them have faced consequences, like the Samurai developers or the Tornado Cash on the Ethereum side.
And they might win their battle, but what did they lost along the way? You know, it's crazy.
Especially if they have families, right? I mean, if it's a lone wolf type person, you can maybe make yourself into some kind of martyr for the cause. But I mean, is it really responsible if you have kids and you're still doing that? I mean, right? There's no good answer to that question.
No.
And then you have others who've tried to match Satoshi's level of OPSEC, but they've invariably left some tiny breadcrumbs. A perfect example of this is the creator of Nostr himself, Fiat Jeff, right? And some overzealous quote-unquote journalist from a publication who shall not be named was able to seize upon those and dox him.
Yeah, which is they hit a bunch of lies around, you know, one truth type of thing too with that story. It was pretty ridiculous, but yeah.
Yeah. And then you have still others who maintain some level of semi anonymity. Mm-hmm. You're not a developer QW. You're semi anonymous in the sense that on Nostr you're QW, but you've revealed your face in public at a couple of events.
I'm not afraid. I don't need to have my face everywhere. It's not right. Like my thing. And Avi, you know, we have faces for radio. So, you know, we try to.
Exactly.
And we don't want stalkers, you know.
We put them to good use. And you know, our guest is an example of this, right? Anonymous. Mm-hmm. On Nostr, but has, like you, QW, revealed his face in public and also has faced some consequences for building freedom technology. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Just to cap that off, though, like you're going back to that HBO Satoshi movie, we've seen this time and time again how this hurts people that are falsely accused or even assumed, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But like that poor Japanese gentleman.
Yeah.
His life was a living hell for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you know, but yet we as a culture or some people in the culture continue to kind of bank off of it and like the clickbait of it, I suppose.
Yeah, they certainly do. And speaking of nameless, faceless developers building freedom technology, it's my pleasure to welcome UTXO, the webmaster, to Plebchain Radio.
Hey, yo.
What's up, brother?
Not much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, UTXO, we've got to start with a burning question before we get into the meat of this conversation, which is, have you ever considered a career as a bouncer, especially at a karaoke bar?
Well, you know, I do have some experience in this area, and I would say it's not for me. Having done it once and dealing with drunk Miami puto guys, I probably wouldn't do it again, and I don't recommend it.
for those of you wondering what this is about, for BitCon Miami 2023, the one last year, a group of us, I think it was UTXO, Derek Ross, Sean Yeager, myself, decided to have a satellite event, a Nostr karaoke event. And it was a fantastic event, except that we didn't have bouncers. So UTXO and I decided that we'd play the role of bouncer there. And we had to deal with some fairly rowdy folks trying to barge in when this was a booked private event. But I will say UTXO did a fantastic job. There was one incident, UTXO, I don't know if you remember this. There was a guy who didn't have a ticket. He tried to get in saying, but I have a whale pass. I should be able to get into all events. And I think you told him what he should do with himself. Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember. Yeah. Whale pass can... go fuck yourself.
Is this the same event that had a poll? Was this the same? Maybe that's upstairs.
The infamous Derek Ross.
I did notice Derek Ross did leave the room here downstairs. There, maybe he knew it was coming.
We did confirm that Derek Ross is in fact a stripper.
That event, QW, was actually quite a legendary event, apart from the fact that UTXO and I were learning how to be bouncers. There was the Derek Ross stripper pole photo shoot that happened. And a story which was told to me afterwards. There was apparently a young open Michael sitting in the back of the room who didn't know anyone. And the way the story was told to me by Sir Sleepy was he went back up, but back there to this young gentleman who one might even say could have been called Closed Mike back in those days, and talked him out of it, out of his shyness, and then he became the value for value titan that he is today. Now, this is, of course, Sir Sleepy's retelling of the story. Both you and
Closed
I know.
Closed Michael turned into Open Mike, huh?
Open Mike. I think we know. Open Mike was inspired to become the face of the value for value revolution after listening to Plepchain Radio.
You know what's great about that event from me watching from home? Essentially, it was kind of a motivation or a momentum rollover from Nostrica, right? You had a lot of that purple power moving right over from Nostrica over to Miami. And then they even had the rock star party on the beach. There was a lot to follow there. I think that was really what set us, you know, apart from the Bitcoin conference type, I suppose.
Yeah, those were simpler times, QW. happier times, no reply guy spam on Nostra, but we have someone who's going to tell us what exactly to do with that kind of reply guy spam. So before we get into that UTXO, this is quite the digression there, but I have fond memories of that karaoke evening back in Miami. So let's since this is the first time for you on the show, what's your backstory, man? How did you get where you are today?
Oh dear. It's sadly my story is the same as everyone else's, so I don't want to I don't want to bore everyone, but basically it's just like, you know, heard about Bitcoin right away, dismissed it, and then, you know, really pissed off 2017 when I'm like, oh my god, I could have had 1,000 Bitcoin, and then buy the top, get fucking wrecked just like everyone else, you know. So that's basically my Bitcoin story. But then, you know, COVID hit, and that's when I really started to believe. I was like, okay, these crazy Bitcoin people are actually not so crazy. They know what they're talking about. It's all true. And then I just, you know, I just bought in 100%, and I said, this is what I'm doing with my life. Starting now, it's all Bitcoin. And that's the story, man, since 2020, just.
Did you have like an edge in your life that maybe leaned libertarian, or, you know, fuck the state, or, you know, something that kind of drew you to Bitcoin?
No, honestly, I'll just be honest, man. I was pretty much an NPC before Bitcoin, you know, like I liked Bill Gates. I thought he was a great entrepreneur. you know, I believe the news. It was pretty bad. I would just say that I was really into like finance and investing and this kind of thing, and that's what originally, like 2017, I was like, you know, I was just trying to make money with Bitcoin. I didn't believe in the ethos or anything. I was just like, oh, it's going up, so I'll try to buy it, and then I just lost all my money, basically.
Low float.
yeah. So I mean. I would say that I'm pretty like anti-authority, though. Like, even though I was an NPC, I was still like very independent, entrepreneurial. I was never into like, you know, getting jobs and putting on a suit and doing all that kind of thing. But not to the extent of like the way I am now.
So you went from NPC and Bill Gates fanboy to... Talk about your recent motivation to maybe move to the mountains or go rural. Have you gotten to that point where you're starting to think, I kind of want to go sovereign?
Well, I mean, part of me does. You know, I'm a city boy.
Reflecting on that note that you sent probably a week ago, and I was thinking about that too.
I mean,
every Bitcoiner they cross that bridge where you're like, do I really want to be here? Should I go rural?
Well, I mean, it's a very romantic idea, but I think I know myself well enough that, you know, I'm not into that manual labor life and, you know, like chopping firewood or mowing lawns, this kind of thing. You know, I need like a landlord to take care of that for me and Uber Eats to bring me my food. So, yeah, I'm sort of more in that zone. But, you know, to take a bit of a tangent, I live in Toronto and I live in a very, like, I would call it the alt left of Toronto. Like literally there are communists. Posters around like join the Canadian Communist Party. You know, there's Gaza and Palestine spray painted everywhere. There's no Canadian flags, either gay flag, Ukraine flag, Palestine flag. It's like, it is just awful. So for me, at least, you know, this is not the kind of shit I want to see when I'm like walking my dog every day. So, you know, I'm just getting real fucking fed up of this. So I am looking for a place to move to, but it's pretty unlikely it's going to be some rural area.
Would it be Canada, though?
I mean, it pretty much has to be. I tried to move to America, but you wouldn't have me. So, you know, your loss.
Hey, if it were up to me, come right in. No, but Yudik, so I do want to go back to that period, right? When you, in your words, you flipped from being an NPC to an instrument of the revolution. What was that? Was that a single aha moment, or was it a process during COVID?
It was pretty much an aha moment, I would say. It's like very early on when they were talking about like, oh, 2 weeks to slow the spread or whatever. Like just right away, they were already coming out and saying that like, oh, COVID is like 99.9%. not gonna kill you and all this kind of stuff. And then they were like making it like nothing added up to me. Like everybody was watching the news, I was watching it too, and I was like, this makes actually no sense what they're doing. Like everything from they're like the best way to not die from COVID is to be healthy, but then they closed all the gyms and opened all the liquor stores. Like just literally every single thing they did was incorrect and didn't make sense. And that's when I was just like, you know what, fuck this. These people are just terrible, horrible people. They're like actively trying to hurt people here. So fuck this. And that's sort of when I like really got deep into the Bitcoin rabbit hole, because the Bitcoiners sort of shared these views that I had developed outside of the Bitcoin echo chamber.
It was an interesting time, a surreal time looking back. Now, I mean, I was probably in an even more left place than you during the pandemic, UTX. I was in the heart of Manhattan when things were going down. And I mean, I was already, you know, underway on my Bitcoin journey by then. So it wasn't, you know, the pandemic wasn't what flipped the switch for me, but it certainly reinforced it like nothing else did. Strange time.
Yeah, absolutely fucking wild. But, you know, honestly, looking back, thank God, because, you know, I probably wouldn't have seen things properly if they didn't respond like that. So actually, I'm in a sick kind of way. I'm actually kind of thankful.
Yeah, I mean, in some sense, it did happen for us, right? For us, the ones who, I guess, came out of it stronger. Now, unfortunately, not for some of our lost folks there, but I'm still curious, like you on the NPC to Chad switch, right? So one moment you're thinking, you know, you're respecting Bill Gates, and presumably once that switch gets flipped, you're like, wait a second, I was completely wrong, right? Did you have that moment where you admitted to yourself that I was completely wrong?
Yeah,
about this guy,
Yep. Wrong about so many things, man. Like it was not so easy. And especially because all of my friends are still NPCs. Right. And, you know, I like a lot of those relationships, they're damaged now, you know, like they'll never be the same. Because like a lot of people just think that I'm crazy now because I don't like Bill Gates, or because I think the government is, you know, doesn't have our best interest at heart. you know, that makes me a bad person or something. But yeah, I mean, like, if I think about my NPC self looking at myself now, I would probably think those same things, you know, like that this guy is just fucking crazy. But I guess, you know, Odell's thing about like just staying humble is, you know, I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. And I'm wrong plenty of times. So it was relatively easy, I would say, because I've always been open to that and like on the quote unquote like self-improvement type of train. So I'm willing to forego my ego and admit that I'm wrong and just try to do better, you know. And that's basically what happened with Bitcoin.
Yeah, an ego death. A lot of people have gone through that with Bitcoin. It is interesting how that happens. And when did you find Nosta?
When did I find Nosta? It was actually, so when I was building Nodeless, and I know we'll get to that, but during that time I was working with a guy named Pavel, who's also working with me right now on Bitvora. Shout out Pavel. And he basically just mentioned it, you know, like we were talking about Twitter and stuff, and he was just like, oh, Nosta is the next big thing. And he doesn't even have a Nosta account. Like he, I guess he just read about it or something. He stays on top of the like Freedom Tech stuff. And he just told me about it. I checked it out and I thought it was cool.
You took a little pause off Nosta, I think, for a month or so. Is that right?
Yeah, I've taken two pauses on Nosta. And I guess because like I was on Twitter for a while, and you know, Twitter is super toxic, and just basically I take pauses when I start seeing Bitcoiners getting arrested. I get really fucking nervous. Yeah,
that might kick it.
Yeah, and especially because like I've worked on CoinJoin stuff, I've worked on NoKYC, BTC Pay Server, like I've worked on stuff that I know authorities are not going to like that much. So I just get really fucking spooked and nervous and worried mm-hmm. about my OPSEC, and then I just dip. And then, you know, months later, I'm just like, okay, well, you know, maybe I'm not actually that important and nobody actually cares or is watching what I'm doing. So I'll just come back with my tail between my legs.
Oh, man. I can't imagine. You just think you're looking out the window. Every black Suburban, you're like, is my time up?
Yeah, I no joke. Like, so right outside my house, there's like the ISP box, you know, where all the fiber comes out. I see the guys working on it there, and I'm like, are you guys wiretapping my internet right now? Like, literally every single time, that's the first thought. I get real nervous. I start walking my dog, like go up next to the guy, try to see what the fuck he's doing. But I don't know what he's doing. They're just moving wires around. Who knows?
And I mean, are you full time open source dev?
No, yes and no. Like I don't have a job, so
I guess ultimately I'm just wondering how it is you survive off that lifestyle, because it's a dream. It's a dream if you can survive.
Yeah. So I own a couple of websites that, you know, some of them were at times quite big and doing quite well. They're not now. Like I was into AI way before AI was cool. Like I built an AI website in like 2018. And it got really big around like 2020. This is even still before the big AI boom, before ChatGPT came out. So basically that's how I sustain myself, is I just have like these websites that are very passive and they just like return passive income to me. And yeah, but you know, now that AI is huge, there's all these companies giving away the service that I used to charge a lot for. They just give it away for free now. So it's been a lot tougher. So I gotta make some moves. I gotta make some things happen. But I'm not making any money off like open source stuff. I'm not, you know, funded or anything like that.
But a broader question though, right, is we need folks, I say we here, but it's, I guess, freedom enjoyers, right?
The you and your turtle sitting next to you in the tank next to
you. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's a need for committed folks like you to write code for these Freedom Tech tools, both on the Bitcoin and Nostr side. And if there isn't a meaningful way of funding them in a scalable way, right? I mean, yes, you could, one-off developers can get grants. It's going to be a tough revolution to win.
I put out a note about this yesterday. Like, it's not just Freedom Tech tools, you know. Like, if anybody runs a Linux server right now, if you just want to boot up Linux, there's probably like 10,000 open source libraries that Linux depends on. Like, we're using this in like a browser, a mobile phone. There are thousands of open source packages that all of the software depends on. And like most of these devs, they don't get paid. You have no idea who they are. They're just running basically on passion and principles. I do agree it would be nice to have, you know, funding and support open source developers more. I would absolutely love that. I have zero fears that it's going anywhere, because all of these developers, they just fucking love what they do and nothing is going to stop them. And we have like 40, 50 years of precedent on this now. So I'm not worried about that at all. But do support open source devs, okay? I do agree with that. But don't be worried. It's not going anywhere. And we will win too, by the way.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. That's, I mean, look, it's, I think if the movement can be sustained purely on passion and ethics and that belief system, then that's fantastic. But it will be nice, right, if they are rewarded for this work.
Absolutely. And, you know, Nostr does a reasonable job. We're really small right now. So, you know, a developer can work on something and maybe earn a few hundred bucks. You know, that's obviously not going to sustain anything. But I think, you know, as long as we grow and it gets big enough, I think that we can make some meaningful differences there where developers don't have to do this as like a side hustle. But I would mention the other thing too is like, and even I have packages like this, like, you know, like the Web of Trust Relay. I just built that in one day for myself because I was annoyed with Reply Guy. So it's not like it takes a full-time job, 40 hours a week to build a package that's useful. Like sometimes it could just be a weekend or a side gig, and that's enough to make a meaningful difference.
And is that because Nostr makes it so easy to build, or in general, are you making the case that some of these things are easy to build outside of Nostr as well in the broader open source world?
Yeah, just broader outside of Nostr. Certainly Nostr is very easy to build on, like extremely easy. And it's especially because, like, just going back to those libraries, and, you know, shout out to my friend Fiat Jeff. He's made so many libraries, like he's getting all this credit for making Nostr. And of course, he deserves all of that credit. But he makes so many libraries that nobody really even knows about that makes it even easier to work on Nostr. But to answer your question more broadly, like packages in general, they're, of course, it depends on scale. You know, something like Bitcoin as a open source library, like that requires insane amounts of work. But there are lots of little things that they're just like small building blocks, a little piece of Lego that are not hard. They don't take a lot of work, but they are very important and foundational. I don't want to say that it's like that it's easy, because a lot of it takes, you know, sometimes decades of experience. But once you have all of that experience and skill to like build the actual tool itself, the harder part is like having the idea or being able to frame the problem properly in your own mind and develop an elegant solution that answers it in like a minimalistic way.
I just thought of something. So when Nostr first came around, or at least it went, you know, mainstream in our culture, it seemed like there was a lot of proof of concepts out, you know, a lot of different, oh, check this out. And it would be cool, but then it seemed like the dev would kind of get stumped, or it just wouldn't work properly. is building something and then actually doing bug fixes and all that, working backwards, a totally different ball game.
Yeah, the maintenance, the bug fixing, the like little features, the little like, okay, your package works for like 90% of the people, like 90% of the time, but what about those other 10%? And you end up like spending more time just like trying to fix all the edge cases. So that happens a lot. And then like with Noster specifically, we are evolving very fast. Like new NIPs come out to replace old NIPs. I still can't say NIP without laughing and smiling. So like, you know, you do have to keep up. And when a new NIP like replaces something, you know, half the clients will adopt it, the other half don't. Some relays are not compatible with it. So it's a little bit messy, but you know, we're working our way through it. I think because Noster is really small, we can afford to just sort of like break things and have a shitty UX because it doesn't really affect that many people, you know, 10, 20,000 people or something. It's not really a big deal. But as we get bigger, we're not going to be able to work like this much longer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I think some of it might just be, it's so easy to build on. Developers have so many different ideas and then they just move on to the next idea. Kind of like a Pablo who's, you know, the Noster necromancer, like Guy Swan would say.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Pablo has slowed down and started working on like bigger. It's not just like, oh, here's my 3-hour zap.life project or whatever, you know, like Highlighter, Nutsack, NDK. These are like big, big ongoing projects. So I think Pablo has evolved a bit from where we started.
I thought it was pretty funny, like zaplife.lol. A lot of these that he built, these little mini apps, the domain, obviously the year went up and all of a sudden those Zap Life all of a sudden didn't work. And you're like, hey, what's going on with this? He's like, oh, and you can just tell all he did was re-register the domain or pay his $6.99 or something.
Yep.
That's the domain dream, right, Avi?
That's right. We did a whole meme readout on the topic a few weeks ago. So UTXO, let's talk about Nodeless. What was Nodeless, or what is Nodeless if it still exists today?
So just a little bit before Nodeless, my real like foray into open source Bitcoin work was working on BTC Pay Server. And that was just basically because I wanted it for my own site. Like I mentioned the AI thing, I wanted to accept Bitcoin payments on my website. So I was looking into BTC Pay Server, but it didn't work for my use case, like in the way I wanted it to. So that's when I just started working on it to make it work for me. Like it was actually just a selfish thing. I was not trying to help anybody. I just wanted it to work on my own site. And so I contributed there. But then the more I got involved in BTC Pay Server, I became like a quasi support desk, you could say, like just trying to get other people to use it. And that's when I noticed, you know, this whole node running thing, Lightning, is actually impossible for the average person to run a node properly. Like even on Noster, like Noster has the most hardcore technical Bitcoiners of like any community. And even Noster just can't node run. Like I made a bot that, I know I'm going on a tangent. I'll go back. I made a bot yesterday that it just zapped everybody I followed. And 30% of the people who have self-custody wallets, their zaps didn't work. They couldn't even accept a 3-sat zap. So even the most technical Bitcoiners couldn't run Lightning. So basically like, in working on BTC Pay Server, I was like, you know what? I actually don't think this is going to work. I don't think this is going to scale because Lightning is way too hard for the average person. So that's where the idea of Nodeless came along. It's like, how can I give somebody something that's like BTC Pay Server where it's no KYC, it's just easy to use, an easy way to start accepting Bitcoin payments, but all the Lightning stuff, somebody else takes care of it. So that's basically what Nodeless was. It was like the easy version of BTC Pay Server. Yeah, that's what it was. It was running for about 18 months. Actually, it was announced at Nostra Rica. That's when it was like first revealed to the world. And it did quite well, you know, like we had, I think we had like 5,000 customers on it or so. We even had Jack Dorsey tweeted about it. It was in the news and stuff, like, you know, it was doing quite well while it lasted. But eventually, you know, you can't run a no KYC business and then put your face on it, go promote it on podcasts, talk about how good it is to go no KYC. Like eventually you're going to get a knock on the door, and that's what happened.
So you had to shut it down.
I remember when Jack tweeted that or reposted it, or I think either way, that Jack attention was like, yes. And then you're like, uh-oh. Kind of the same thing, same time, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a kick the hornet's nest type of thing. Because, yeah, they were starting to write articles about it that, you know, oh, Jack Dorsey is, and like all these news people, you know, like all he did was tweet a link. He didn't say, I endorse this, I'm involved, nothing. All he did was just tweet a link, right? And everyone's like, oh, Jack Dorsey back, nolist.io, in the news, right? Motherfuckers. So, yeah, it's basically, I had to shut down the main instance of it. I didn't necessarily have to. Basically, what happened is the Canadian regulators, called FinTrack, basically just said, hey, where is your license? You know, they weren't like, oh, you're going to go to jail or anything. They're just like, hey, where is it? And obviously we didn't have a license, and the whole point of Nodeless was to be no KYC. So I had two options. It was either I shut it down and open source it, so anybody who was running Nodeless could just go ahead and run their own instance of it. Of course, that reintroduces the problem of you have to run your own Lightning node, or I would have to shotgun KYC everyone and get a FinTrack license. So I picked the former route to just open source it, give away all the code, and, you know, just tell the government, I don't have a license and I'm just going to shut it down. And that's what we did.
Is that like a money transmitting license?
Basically, yeah, a money services business.
That seems to be the big sticking point with a lot of these regulations, even all the way to the node itself, in some of the jargon. Seems very Luddite, like that's one of the main focuses where they that low hanging fruit of attack.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in Canada, we don't have the same kind of like aggressive regulators the way the Americans do. You know, like America will just like straight up arrest you. You know, like at least the Canadians were nice enough to just ask me politely where my license was. You know, and give me an opportunity to respond and stuff. But I think, it's very hard to say, like, if you're someone like Async, who run the biggest Lightning node right now, I would be pretty nervous that, you know, someone might turn around, especially the Americans will turn around and say, hey, you are running a money transmitter. You're routing, you know, Async is probably routing like 100,000 payments a day, if I had to guess, mm-hmm. between like, you know, rebalancing and zaps and all this kind of thing. So that's super intense. If you're just like a random node, there's like 17, 18,000 nodes out there, I wouldn't be too worried. But if you're huge, I would be a little bit worried.
And that's why Async has left the US, right? US users cannot use Phoenix anymore.
Their wallet has left, but their node has not. Yeah. Anybody can still route through their node.
Hmm. So how did Nodeless, was you running your own node on behalf of other folks?
Yeah. That's basically how you could describe it. It was for e-commerce payments. So if you just had a website, you wanted to accept Bitcoin payments over Lightning. The novel thing that we did to try to make it like basically non-custodial was, as soon as we received a payment on your behalf, it would immediately go to your Lightning wallet. So we would just kind of, this is what I'd like to call it. Of course, the regulators didn't agree with this, but that we were just routing payments for you and like providing infrastructure. But I guess, you know, those 5 seconds of custody while we forwarded it was enough to be called a money transmitter.
Well, I mean, even a fraction of a second would be enough for them. So given your experience with Nodeless UTXO, what would your advice be to open source developers who are looking to build tools to make, I mean, this is what you wanted to do, right? Just make a better UX and the users' lives easier. What would your advice be to them? On how should they, is it just be completely anonymous? Don't talk about it, just do it? Or would it be something else?
Well, a couple of things. The first thing I would say is, like, yes, I wanted to improve UX, but it wasn't all altruistic. Nodeless was a business. We charged a fee. So we were trying to earn money as well. Like, we were trying to solve a problem, as you know, that's what entrepreneurs do, right? You see a problem in the market, you try to solve it, and if it's valuable, then people will pay you. So that's also what we were trying with Nodeless. In terms of like what I would recommend for other developers is, don't, like, if you are sort of like being altruistic, I guess, or just like trying to build open source tools, you don't want to host anything. Like, that's the problem that the Samurai guys got into as well. It's because they were the coordinator. It wasn't because they wrote the code. Although, you know, we are seeing things like, oh, code is not free speech, and there's some assertions there. The real problem is that they were running a coordination service. So if you are planning to to build tools that subvert the state, you better only write the code and not host anything. And if you are going to host something, you better like do it from, I don't know, like, I don't even want to mention it, but just don't do it from a G7 country, because you're just asking for it.
Yeah, it's it's amazing that things have come to this, right? that the best thing to do is write code in North Korea or something.
Yeah,
or something,
I mean, something. We live in a country that fought endless wars for dollar hegemony, you know, and it's like, oh man, we've even drone striked a U.S. citizen. So it's something where, I don't know, man. It's just crazy to think about that. It's so unnatural, but it's the reality.
Like, if we truly had free speech in these countries, like, Julian Assange would have never been a prisoner. You know, he would have been celebrated a hero from day one. So we don't have free speech. It's actually just a big LARP. If you do something that attacks the power structures, they will come after you. And sometimes the bigger they are, the bigger they kick your ass, you know, like, that's just how it goes. But I would say, you know, the other thing about Nodeless is it was a bit of a product of an echo chamber, you know, being all like, oh, no KYC, privacy, this and that. But when we were out there knocking on the doors, like, you know, we're trying to get Nodeless into just like a convenience store, into a bakery, this kind of thing. They think it's sketchy to do no KYC. They don't care about that. They're happy to do KYC. They're happy to pay their taxes. They want to be compliant. So actually, like, if you're building B2B products in Bitcoin, I think actually doing no KYC is actually a disadvantage if you actually want to build a real business around this.
Yeah, that's one of the first questions I've seen when I, you know, talk to people that don't run business or have an established business is, how do I pay taxes with that? You're like,
literally.
Well, that gets complicated.
That's literally like their first question. Like, oh, can I generate a tax report in this? And I just like face palm, but it's like, yeah, I mean, that's what they want.
That's the next $1 billion business idea, isn't it? Right? Have a tax reporting feature on that's connected to whatever your point of sale is for a business. That it just, all it does is, you know, calculates the short-term capital gains on each one of the, on all the sales.
Yeah, I mean, could be like maybe that segues a little bit into my next business if you guys want to ask about it. But yeah, basically like the evolution of Nodeless is this new service I have called Bitvora.com, which is it's a very similar idea to Nodeless, but it's more expansive. So it's not just for e-commerce payments. It's to, if you want to send payments, like that bot I made that zapped everyone, that's using the Bitvora API. You don't have to node run. You can just, you know, with a couple lines of code, you can send and receive Bitcoin. And within that platform, it does all those kinds of things. Like if you do want to generate your tax reports and do your KYC and all that kind of stuff, now I have a service that businesses actually want. You know, plebs don't want it, and that's fine. You know, plebs should run their nodes or run BTC Pay Server or whatever. But if you're like a larger business and, you know, you want to do things by the book, then now we have a service that will actually work for you there.
So does it actually do what I just said, like calculate the taxes at each sale and report that out?
What it does is it calculates the exchange rate on every single transaction. So like it doesn't in one click give you that report, but it does, like you can sort of like export it out and do it. But you know, maybe we will have that one click, but it's basically there.
Yeah, I mean, because to QW's earlier point, any merchant try to Orange will, and typically restaurants and bars, they're intrigued by the idea, but they say, yeah, but what do I do for taxes? And maybe just give them a tool like this, right? And maybe that's what's going to drive merchant adoption.
Yeah, and well, you think about like these merchants, you're like, yeah, and you should get on BTC map. And it's like, well, if you're not paying taxes, why would you want to be on that map? You know, you want the exposure. It's just like, you know, you can't be that ungovernable and have a license, a business license, and have someone knock on your door easily, right?
Yeah, totally. And like with Bitvora, at least, like we're trying to be the more just the infrastructure and hardcore Bitcoiner company. So it's our hope that people like I don't know, like Moneris or I don't know who the American payment processors are, but like, you know, whoever is already doing point of sale, it's like, hey, you already have all these customers, you already have all this infrastructure, you can now use Bitvora to plug Bitcoin into your existing infrastructure without having to like adopt a new system that's like Bitcoin only, and you have this Bitcoin only device that you forgot to charge because, you know, only 1% of your customers actually want to pay in Bitcoin. So the idea with Bitvora is we're more just like the B2B at a high level. We provide that infrastructure so that in a very scalable way, payment processors, as just one example, or exchanges, people who already have like sort of a well-established large platform can just very easily add Bitcoin and Lightning into it without like adopting something brand new.
And who runs the nodes?
Me and my team.
For the big. Okay. Yep. Is it a custodial Lightning then that you plug them in with?
Yep. You could call it custodial. The way our terms of service work right now, and you know, we are FinTrack licensed and regulated, but we're not like what's called a qualified custodian. So the way the Canadian government sees our business is that when you put money into Bitvora, you are expecting to make a transaction. You're not like, we're not like BitGo or Coinbase or something where you're expecting us to provide security. You're expecting us to put your Bitcoin on rails so you can now send and receive payments. So while we are a custodian, like when you do deposit Bitcoin with us, we do control the keys. We're not a qualified custodian in that like you would, you know, store 10 Bitcoin with us to keep it safe. That's not what we do.
How hard was it to get a license?
The hard part was, again, just that ego death, you know, like, because for so long, even like my own brand on social media was all about like open source, no KYC, fuck the government, this and that. And here I am with a fucking license, you know? So that was actually the
back to Bill Gates. Here we go.
Yeah, there we go. I'm gonna go take 7 vaccines now and fucking get licensed in every country. Yes. Yeah, I would say that's hard. Getting the license is actually it's not that hard besides just like waiting. You know, like basically all the government wants you to do for your license is just have KYC so that in the event they want to go back and say, hey, who made this transaction? You have an answer for them. But there's not much more than that. You know, they're just like, hey, do you have a compliance program? Oh, you do? Okay, here's your license. That's it.
Yeah, I was trying to distinguish because when you were first describing it, I was thinking about Zaprite. But Zaprite does not have a node. It's just an interface that allows you to either connect it to something like Stripe, right, or to your backend Bitcoin node, and they just provide the interface. But obviously, I think you go one step further by providing the Bitcoin infrastructure and Lightning infrastructure as well.
That's right. Like so, Zaprite would be a perfect example of someone who we would want to partner with. So. You know, if you're a company and you're accepting Bitcoin payments, you know, you would have Stripe, and then you could just, instead of like having to run your own node to work with Zaprite, you could just use the Bitvora API. We don't have that right now, but you know, hopefully we can work out a deal with Zaprite and other exchanges and payment processors.
Yeah, that's that's great. That's a nice overview there, UTXO. So let's talk about something else that you posted about a week or two ago. Haven. What's that about?
Haven, yeah. I'm very proud of this relay. I think this is a very... So Haven is designed... It's a personal relay that's designed for a future state of Noster. So... a lot of my notes, you guys will know that I'm a bit of a hater on how Noster works right now. And I think a lot of clients have sort of built it the lazy way where it's just like, oh, connect to Domus, connect to Nos.lol, connect to these like big public relays and just fucking call it a day. And it's not decentralized basically at all. You know, if we take down the top 10 relays and Noster.build, like we just lost like 70-80% of Noster. Okay, so that's not good. So the idea behind Haven is this future state of Noster where clients are actually using the outbox and inbox model. So, you know, if I follow you, Avi, my client will look at, hey, what relays does Avi use? And whether that's your own relay or a public relay, it will fetch your notes based on what you have specified instead of saying, hey, I'm my user on my phone. I've set these 10 relays to be what I read from, so only read from them. It will instead say, who do I follow and what notes am I interested in and what relays are the best to fetch those notes. So that's sort of like the idea behind Haven is for this future state where clients are gossiping properly. And what it does is it provides you with four different types of relays in one. So the first one is a private relay. So if you're using, let's say like Amethyst, you'll have drafts. I don't know if other clients have it. I'm sure they'll all eventually get there, but you know, you don't want other people to see your drafts. You know, you're replying to someone's note. I don't know if it's just me. I'll just put myself out there that like, you know, someone says something I don't like on Noster. So I'm about to reply to it. And then I'm like, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to hit send on this. Now that's a draft and that's a note, and I don't necessarily want other people to know that I like was about to post something to someone else's note. So the private relay, only you can read from, only you can write to, nobody else can see it. So drafts is just like one use case, but another one might be, you know, you might have a private to-do list or something, or you might have your private cashew e-nuts, your nutsack in your private relay. So that's like one thing, gives you a private relay that only you can read and write from. The next one is a chat relay. So I'm sure we've all seen this. You send a DM to someone and then boom, 2 minutes later, you have DM reporter replying. Hey, you know, Avi just messaged this sex worker or something, you know. I shouldn't say Avi. It was Sir Sleepy that got wrecked for that in the early days of Noster. So you don't want people knowing about your DMs, you know, your DMs should be private. So what Haven does is it says, hey, if you want to DM me, use my private DM relay, and anybody in my web of trust can send me a DM to this relay, and nobody else will see it except for me. So it provides that. Now, it's not just DMs. We also have like NIP 29 coming out, different types of like private group chats. Like, hopefully, you know, so much of us, it's like, oh, we go to Simplex or we go to like KeyChat, and like, hopefully we could just get Noster to be the be all end all. We could finally fucking delete Telegram, hopefully one day. And Haven is like hoping to be a piece of that puzzle. Is that like, you know, not only it's good that you can run your own private DM relay, but I could also run it just for my friends, you know, like anybody who follows me can use my private DM, and maybe you trust me more than like the big relays that see everything. Or you trust your friend, like as long as just like one person runs it in the web of trust, you can use their relay. So Haven provides that chat relay. It also provides you with an inbox relay. So this is if you want to reply or react to a note and you want to make sure that I can read it, anybody in my web of trust can like, you know, zap me or react or reply. And that will go directly into my inbox relay to just guarantee that I'm going to receive it. You know, like because this will happen right now. I don't have Domus set on my Amethyst. So if you zap me and it just goes to the Domus relay, I'm actually not going to see it because my client is not gossiping properly. So if you write it directly to my inbox, you could guarantee that I'm going to see your reaction. So that's the third relay. And then the fourth relay is your outbox relay. So this is, whenever I write a note, I want to guarantee that other people can read my notes. You know, like if I post to some random relay, they might delete my note in the future. They might censor it. So if you want to guarantee see my notes at any time, you can always go to my outbox relay and it will automatically have every single one of my notes. So that's a very long-winded way. That's what Haven does. It has all of that functionality wrapped into one neat, tidy package.
So if I wanted to use Haven today, what would I need to do?
You would need a virtual machine. So like a hosting provider, either like, you know, AWS, Google Cloud, one of these hosting providers. Or if you're super based and like kind of technical, you could run it out of your own house, but that's way harder. You know, like a lot of these people, if you're willing to pay like $9 for a blue check, you know, you could pay $7 a month for a hosting account and then just deploy it to the cloud. You know, there's a little README file. I don't think it's that hard. You know, I'm a developer, so it's easy for me. But, you know, if you follow the README on Haven, I think that pretty much anybody who's like on Noster and interested in this kind of stuff should be able to deploy it pretty easily. Mm-hmm.
Now, in theory, you can still get rocked by AWS, right, when you do that.
So yes, but Haven has a backup feature. So all of your notes, you can back them up wherever you want. Now, right now we do only support AWS for backups, but we are very quickly adding other ways to back up your notes. So even if they rug you, you just go to another provider or you self-host it or whatever, import your notes from wherever you back them up and you're good to go. That's what Haven stands for. It's high availability vault for events on Noster. The high availability is an important part of that. So like we do redundant backups of your notes.
And could it be something like a Start 9 implementation down the road?
It could be. I actually know some people are working on that. Some people know also that I'm a Start 9 hater a little bit, but yes. yes.
Umbral.
Yeah, even Umbral. So here's the other thing, right? If you wanted to run it on Start9 or Umbral without exposing your IP, probably the easiest way would be to run it over Tor. But, you know, Tor can be kind of like slow and unreliable. So like, I'm not a huge fan of using Tor, but at the end of the day, yes, it's possible. And I can't stop anybody from doing that. I mean, the code is just out there. You can do whatever you want with it. And I know that there are people already actively working on putting it on Umbral and Start9 and that kind of thing. It's just, I'm not the one doing it.
And then you've also talked about Web of Trust relays. Before we get into that, UTXO, you know, QW and I, we've been talking about Web of Trust for the past several episodes, several months. But maybe
we always ask the same question, right?
Yeah.
Define Web of Trust.
For our listeners who might not be as clued in into the technical details, could you define Web of Trust?
Sure. Well, the thing is, there's no set definition, and I feel like my Web of Trust relay probably should have been named Web of Not Spam Relay. So how my relay works is it looks at everybody who I follow and then who they follow, and it builds the network just kind of two layers deep based only on follows. So just because you follow someone doesn't mean you trust them, right? The only assumption that Web of Trust Relay is making is that you don't follow spammers, because that's really not in your own best interest. Like, nobody's going to go around like following Reply Guy. So that's sort of the underlying assumption. But it certainly doesn't mean you trust someone just because you follow them. I certainly follow plenty of people I don't trust. So to answer your question, what is Web of Trust? I don't think it's what I've implemented on this, where it's just, you know, who I follow and then who they follow. So yeah, that's basically like what we've called it. But if I wanted to, if I had like an ideal state of what I called Web of Trust, it would be me explicitly putting a note out there like, Avi, I trust Avi, I trust KW, I trust Derek Ross. And I've signed a note saying explicitly that I trust them, which is very different than a follow. And then, you know, so I trust Avi, and then I look up Avi and I see who does Avi trust. Because if I trust Avi, then I also trust his judgment on who he trusts. And to me, that would be a much more accurate way to describe what Web of Trust should be.
That's attestations, right? And we had what that sign note where you explicitly call out the NPUBs, right? That's so Nathan Day, I don't know if you know him, UTXO, the guy who, the creator of BTC Map.
Yep.
And he is working with, I think, a few other folks, Arcanox and Ben Gunn and a few others on the proof of place NIP. And there, like, how do you know that a place on a map is actually a place in real life, right? And I think they're implementing this sort of stricter definition of Web of Trust, which is based off of attestations.
Yes. Now, I don't know too much about that particular NIP, but that exact idea, yes, like I completely agree. Like, you have to explicitly say that you trust, whether it's a place or a person or an app or whatever it is. Maybe they're just doing places, but I mean, that could work for any type of entity. That, in my opinion, is a much more accurate way to define a Web of Trust.
Right. It could be proof of doctor as well, right? For example, if you could have, in theory, at some point in the future, near future, doctors signing medical, encrypted medical notes to patients. But how do you know that person is a doctor? Maybe you can have attestations, right? Proof of doctor.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And same thing with like all this open source software, you know, like, you know how... You know how easy it is to like write malicious code and then just like call it open source, but nobody looked at it. I remember the early days of Amethyst. Now I do trust Vidor, you know, I would give Vidor attestation that I trust him. But in the early days of Amethyst, like I didn't review the code fucking once, you know, he just put out a new release. I downloaded the APK, put it on my phone. I didn't know what the fuck was in there. I didn't build it myself. You know, but there is open source code out there that I have reviewed that I am sensitive about. And like, maybe you trust me as a developer and I can say, yes, I reviewed this code. And here's my signature saying that, you know, I trust this code. And you could go off that. Like, that's way better than just saying, oh, it's open source, so that's good enough. That doesn't necessarily mean anybody reviewed it.
Yeah. And in a similar vein, UTXO, I haven't done it, but I've heard of others who have in the early days of Nostra, especially, right? But like the early amethyst days that you were talking about, a lot of people put their NSECs, raw dogged their NSECs into multiple clients.
Yep.
You got to practice safe NSEC. That's for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Like, and these days I do review, like before I install Amethyst, I actually do review the code because it's not just Vidor working on it anymore. It is a very large project. And as amazing as a dev as Vidor is, like maybe he just didn't catch something when in somebody else's code. So when there is a review now, like I actually do look at the changes, like what was changed in the code before I install it on my phone.
So you made one post or note, and I don't know if it was just a play on words, but you were talking about dumb relays versus smart relays. So currently Nostr pretty much just has dumb relays, and that's kind of the beauty lightweight factor of it, right? But maybe talk about the dumb relays and the possibility of smart relays. Go ahead.
And just to add to that question, QW, you know, this is... I think Ben Ark was the first person I've heard who in his mind, right, the beauty of Nostr is it's switched the paradigm from dumb client and smart server, right, to smart client and dumb server. But I think your post makes it seem like you're taking the opposing view.
Yeah, I completely reject. I think that is such a fucking stupid idea. Jesus Christ. So a few reasons. The first one is the client should be smart as well. Both the client and the server should be smart. Just right off the bat, like if a relay is doing spam filtering, that's smart, right? If you run a relay that just accepts every single post, you will be overwhelmed in like 3 days and your hard drive will explode. So just right off the bat, there's already an expectation that relays are doing some form of spam filtering, and that's a smart feature. You know, Web of Trust, that's a smart feature. And we can already see, like, people want things like DVMs or algorithms or just, like, basic things. Like, show me what the popular posts were today. You know, like, your client, if you wanted your client, your phone to do that, you would have to download every single fucking note that was posted on Nostr, every single one. Okay. So we're talking like gigs of data in real time, compute the like count of all of them, the comment count, like do all of this in real time on your phone. Like that, there's just no way you're ever going to do that. That is just not going to happen. It's not going to make it. And I just completely reject that idea. Am I still on? My thing just screwed up. Hello?
Hello? Hello? Did we just crash? I think we may have just crashed. I had to refresh.
I can hear you, UTXO.
You can hear me? Yeah, so basically it's impossible to run a client that could actually provide a UX that people are going to want. You know, you cannot download all the data on Nostr and compute it in real time. That is a completely ridiculous idea. It will never happen. But servers that are online all day that are, you know, hooked up to data centers with like, you know, 100 gigabit connections, they actually can process all of that data. And they can be smart about it. You know, they can only pick the data that you are interested in, that's in your Web of Trust. I completely reject this idea. Both the servers and the clients need to be smart, and the servers are way more powerful and they're online all day. So there's absolutely no reason why they should be dumb.
Yeah, that's that makes sense.
Can I just say, there's the very first time Nostr Nest, it just all of a sudden said page unresponsive for me, and then I couldn't get back to the URL. So yeah, that was there. Interesting. I'm not sure what yours did, yeah, UTXO, but right when you said that, it basically. Yeah, man.
Yeah, I went into this huge rant. I went into a huge rant about dumb relays or dumb servers.
I heard it all. Then right when you said something happened, I can't hear you. I couldn't even move my mouse, essentially.
Censorship. Yeah.
Trudeau's on us. But I still see the recording, so we're good. The beauty of decentralization here.
So UTXO, I guess last question here. It's a three-part question, though.
Well, let me ask Abhi, and I don't know if you did, because you're mentioning Reply Guy and the overwhelming, overwhelming relays. I noticed that after Reply Guy, Primals had some issues. Do you think? Maybe it just seems slower for me. Do you think something's going on with their model or how they handle relays that might be slowing it down because of this Reply Guy bot? It seems like, because I say that because Reply Guy seems to be coming from Primal, relay.primal.net. It seems to be the one attack vector.
Well, see, it's so tough. You know, the Primal guys are from Toronto. They're good guys. They have investment from 1031, who I respect a lot.
Yeah, we've had Milian on, and they're great. I mean, we love Primal. I'm just curious from your perspective.
Well, you know, I guess I gave a little caveat that I do like these guys, but I don't like this project for a few reasons. One is that like Primal is very often, you know, either like broken or not working properly or going so slow. And it's like one of the only projects that has all sorts of investment. So like the project with the most amount of money, you would expect to be the most reliable. And we're sort of seeing the opposite, but then we get all of these new users to like sign up through Primal first, and then it doesn't work and makes Nostr look bad. So I'm a little upset with the Primal guys right now, if I'm being completely honest. And then the second piece is like, they're not even really a Nostr client, you know, like you're not connecting to any relay you want. You're connecting to their caching server and you're getting the data that they give you. Like that's sort of not the idea around Nostr. So I don't know what their issues are, but they were having issues before Reply Guy. And I still see it all the time on my feed. People talking about like, oh, the media doesn't work on Primal, or oh, all the spam is coming from Primal. Oh, there's all these duplicate entries. There's just like all the poor UX that I'm seeing is all like coming from Primal. So yeah, I'm not really too happy with those guys right now. I wish they would do better.
Oh, if they're listening, maybe they'll
make
take
sure
notes.
Boost the show and
well, like,
get us trending on Fountain.
Don't you think it's weird that Samsky's fork of Primal works better than the real version of Primal? Like,
I haven't, right? What was the name of that fork?
Not Primal.lore.
Not Primal.
Like, that's weird.
I just love the culture in general that we just fork and shit and saying not Primal.
Or just like, you know, like my relays, I'm just running it on the shitty hardware. I'm sitting right next to it here in my attic. And it's more reliable than Primal that has like $1 million investment from 1031. Like, how is that possible? I don't
know. Abhi, you're running not nodeless, right? Out of your basement. go ahead, Abhi, the three-part question, unless you got something else on that.
No. That was good. This is good. We got some juicy stuff here.
Well, I mean, you know, not a lot of people are educating the relay side of things, and that's really the nuts and bolts of what makes Nostr special in a lot of ways. And I feel like it doesn't get enough attention. And like you said, UTXO, like everyone just jumps to the one that everyone's on. And if you rug the top seven, then like it was great when Domus Will just deleted Domus relay, and all the notes were essentially still there. But if you did that to the top seven, that'd be devastating, right?
Well, and not only, it's not even about rugging and turning off, because like, you know, they probably won't, but at some point, like if Nostr does what we all hope it will, that just fundamentally won't work. Their relay would cost like tens of thousands of dollars a month to run, to host everybody's shit. And that's just not decentralized. That's not how Fiat Jaff built it. That was not the idea. And it only works because we're small. If we got big, that would not work. And then we would have to like shotgun come up with ideas on how to fix it. But, you know, hopefully people will be running Haven relays and that won't even be a problem because everyone will have their own relays and it'll be la-di-da, good to go.
And do you have a website for Haven?
Just the GitHub repo. There's no no official website.
I'll throw that in the show notes.
Okay, cool.
Along with Bitvora. And by the way, where did you get the name Bitvora? And Haven makes a lot of sense. I don't know where did Bitvora come from?
So Vora is Latin for to devour.
Okay.
And it's sort of my view that what Bitcoin will eventually do, like just to take a bit of a tangent, like we're working with a client right now where they will pay you sats based on how many steps you take on your fitness tracker, because the health insurance companies will basically like it reduces their expenses if you're healthier. So they're actually willing to pay you money to go work out and exercise. So Bitvora is like this weird way to reduce your insurance premiums. Like that's just one small thing that Bitcoin is like sort of infiltrating and starting to devour. And I certainly see Bitcoin being in like every facet of the internet in probably 10, 20 years. You know, like Nostr is a little more up in the air, but I think like guaranteed this is going to happen with Bitcoin. Just like you can go to pretty much any website and expect to like use your credit card. I think in the future, like every app, every business, like it will just be table stakes. Like, of course, you accept Lightning. And I'm hoping with Bitvora that we can help power that and like, you know, be a big infrastructure player in that revolution.
You know, the dirty little secret there about health insurance companies is they it's great that they're reducing premiums, but they're still not going to pay the claims out when it comes to it, right? That is their business model, to not pay and collect premiums. And now they're getting health data as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're just paying the people their sats, you know? So if they're just paying people sats, like I'm happy with that, I guess. You know, I think fundamentally, like with health insurance, the reason they get away with all that shit is because they're regulated, government-protected monopolies. That's the fucking problem. Like in real life, if an insurance company didn't pay a claim, they should just go out of business and no one would ever buy from them. But you have to buy from them. So that's the real fucking problem. It's not that health insurance companies are bad. It's that government-protected monopoly health insurance companies are bad.
Right. Which is what, especially in the U.S., is what we have. So let's move on to the last question here. Three-part question. And, you know, you were talking about Nostr doing or Nostr becoming what we think it will, right? So on that, where do you see this? You know, let's have some fun here. Where do you see Nostr 1 year from now, 5 years from now, and then finally 10 years from now?
Oh man, that's a tough one. What 1 year from now, I just sort of see a, this might be a little bit sad, but I think we're going to be roughly where we're at now, but clients will just be a little less clunky. Yeah, they'll be a little bit smoother. We'll probably have more relays, which will be great. But yeah, probably not that much different. Like, I think if we're all honest with each other, like a year ago today, we were roughly the same size. It's roughly the same people. Like, yeah, there's a little bit more. I'm not going to say that it didn't grow at all, but it certainly didn't explode or anything like that. But I think in 5 years, I think a lot more NPCs are going to start waking up that Facebook is fucked. Twitter is fucked. You know, Elon is not the savior of free speech, not even close. People are already seeing, you know, even with this hurricane shit going on, like people are being censored about sharing hurricane footage and, you know, being suppressed about that. So I think more and more people are just going to be are going to notice that, and it's going to be about more and more mundane things. So it's basically like the more out of control the government gets, the bigger and more important Nostr will become, and the more obvious it will become to everyday people. And then 10 years from now, I think Nostr will it will be much closer to a protocol. It will be much more like in the background where people don't really know that it's NOST or quote unquote. They just go to a website. They don't know how the data was fetched, whether it was with an API or through a WebSocket on a relay. And just basically like we will have, if things work, we should have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of relays that are highly specialized, that are application specific. And it's just a way to sort of like bypass big tech and just give like website owners sort of that original feel of the internet. You know, like it wasn't, there was a time when the internet didn't all run on AWS and Google Cloud. And I think that we are going to go back to that because it will be so easy to run infrastructure through a NASA relay. So that's my hope for 10 years from now.
And that's, and you focus primarily on the social media side, right? Ultimately, this is a protocol for relaying signed events. So yes, social media is what lends itself most obviously to that use case, but there could be several other use cases, right, where NOSTA could become the standard for relaying signed events.
Well, actually, just on that point, like I don't think that NOSTA actually is just a way to relay signed events. I think it's there is a whole like chasm between the request and the response. So I send a signed event to a relay, but maybe that relay, I can ask them to do all sorts of things, whether that's do AI inference for me or build a website or spin up a VM. And then I return a signed event saying, here's your VM, here's your AI data. So there's all sorts of compute that can happen. It's not just like I sent this event and now I want you to give that event to other people. I think there's all sorts of compute that can happen in between. And, you know, I'm starting to get into that. That's sort of like what my relays are doing. You know, you send an event to my relay, you expect me to filter out, like not return reply guy events. That's just one example. But there will be more and more compute and complex jobs that relays will do. Or at least that's what I think is going to happen. We'll see.
And that compute, it sounds like could be some kind of LLM based compute, right? Doing more and more intelligent things in between the transmission of the signed events.
I mean, that's certainly one thing. I mean, we're also expecting relays to store events. But yeah, I mean, they could do LLMs. They could just process data in other ways for you. They could just like do calculations. There's all sorts of things. It definitely doesn't have to just be AI, but we are seeing that more with like DBMs and stuff. Like people are getting into AI. AI is all the hype right now, but I think all sorts of things can happen with that compute.
Great. Well, there's lots to look forward to just based on what you're saying, UTXO. So with that, anything else beyond what we talked about that you'd like to plug?
You want to shill a relay? Do you have like the actual relay dot whatever?
I don't want to shill my own relay. Actually, my own relay is getting a little bit too big. So I'm going to shill Sean Yeager's relay, which is wot.noster.party. Great relay, hell of a relay. And another one, which is really cool, is wot.noster.net. I actually don't know who runs it, but that domain is so elite. Yeah, so, you know, we have over 25 Webhook Trust relays right now. You can use any one of them. You don't have to use mine. And in fact, like, if mine gets any bigger than this, I'm probably going to shut it down because I don't want to be that center point. I don't like that idea at all. Heebie-jeebies. So, yeah, check out those ones. But, you know, just go to GitHub. Go to the GitHub repo. All the relays are listed there. Pick any one you want. They're all good.
Awesome. Anything else, Avi?
No, I think this has been a great conversation. Thank you for bearing through the brief technical difficulty we had. I don't know. Maybe as a souvenir, we'll just keep it in the show. You know,
I didn't think it was bad because I heard everything he said and then I disappeared. And then it sounded like you guys were wrapping up conversation. So it seems like
I disappeared too.
Did you?
I had the same problem that you, well, I didn't. I mean, I froze at exactly the same time that you dropped.
It was Derek Ross on an airplane is the issue.
Yeah,
somehow with, got running into his server in Georgia.
Well, he was solo mining, right, with his bit axe. While
he must have, maybe he mined a block. All right. Well, hey, thank you very much, UTXO. Really appreciated your story being, you know, and honestly, the education you provided on relays is next level. I learned a lot. And the story about no list, that's going to help a lot of people down the road. A lot of sad truths there, but, you know, that's just the state of our mission right now. But all love. And thanks a lot. Anybody listening, please, please, please support Value for Value. Listen on the Fountain app, boost, comment, you know, support Value for Value to the fullest. You know, that's it. So I guess we'll see you next week.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Goodbye.
Cheers.